106.6. Okay, that was ABBA with Summer Night City. I'm Dom Robinson, and listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go, do go have a look in a bit, after you listen to the show, unless you can do two things at once, in which case both things should really be something to do with the show and not something else. If you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. And if you miss me saying facebook.com/DVDfevershow, I'll be sure to mention facebook.com/DVDfevershow about another 50 times more in the next 2 hours. Okay, so what we've got coming up? Well, in the first hour, it's all about films. We start off with a review in which Tilda Swinton and Ezra Miller excel in We Need to Talk About Kevin on Blu-ray. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we have a look at some new cinema releases out this Friday, including Act of Valor and the Hunger Games. And finally, some new DVD releases, including The Adventures of Tintin and The Devils. So we start off with Tilda Swinton and Ezra Miller in We Need to Talk About Kevin. Now, I heard a lot of great things about this film prior to watching it, not least from Mark Kermode, who declared it his favourite film of 2011. Now, while one friend said he didn't see the film because he didn't think it could match up to the book by Lionel Shriver, I had to say that, I'm a complete book philistine, so I always wait for the film to be made before I imbibe. Directed by Lynn Ramsey, filming just her third full-length feature, we see Eva Kachadourian, Tilda Swinton, going for a secretarial job interview at a travel agent company in an office that looks like it was built in the 70s and has never been updated. Her rundown shack of a house is targeted by yobs and splashed with lots of red paint after the interview, and she's hit in the face by a random passerby, as if it's some sort of bizarre dream sequence playing out. In fact, there are several weird moments that at first serve no explanation, but as you begin to watch the film, they do make a lot more sense. Early on, we know that her son, Kevin, Ezra Miller, is 15 and has done something unimaginable, which, at first, is not revealed. However, we do know it has devastated the community. That is all we are told, and it remains a mystery for the majority of the film. Changing between present day, where Eva is single and looking for work, and back when Kevin was born and growing up, and she lived with her husband, Franklin, John C. Reilly, and later young daughter Celia, Ashley Gerasimovich, we see her son being incessantly nasty to Eva during his entire life. Some examples of which being his creation of a virus-ridden CD which kills her laptop, a scene where he heartily tucks into some chicken, just as Eva, he and Eva are about to go out to dinner. And there's a moment where Eva, he accidentally opens his bedroom door, and then, I'm not going to go into detail about what happens, but it's a bit gross to reveal at lunchtime. But if you see my review on DVDfever.co.uk, you'll see the sentence where I mentioned, but it's a bit gross. But he even stoops so low, as we later learn, to getting out some bleach and leaving it within reaching distance for Celia, causing her to suffer permanent disfigurement. Meanwhile, Franklin seems either completely oblivious to what a monster his son is, or just tries to mentally shut it out as if it's not happening. All the while, Kevin is wholly unrepentant about what he's done. When it comes to the acting, Tilda Swinton is outstanding in her role as the mother who can't work out where her parenting skills went out the window. And equally good is Ezra Miller as Kevin. In fact, they complement each other perfectly, as they both have rather an androgynous look. That said, what takes the edge off it is just one nasty incident of event from Kevin after another, and for the most part, there's nothing that makes it perfect, like I've been led to believe. However, it's still a must-see for sure. Presented in the original 2.35:1 theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the image looks crisp and clear with zero faults. And unlike so many films at this ratio these days, it's actually shot in anamorphic Panavision, giving the picture a classy depth, so lacking in modern cinema. Most films of that width are shot in Super 35, which is almost like filming in 16:9 and sticking the black bars on top, save for the CGI effects, which are often created specifically for the intended cinema ratio. Okay, so Super 35 isn't that simplified, but it's very much the format for directors who simply can't be bothered to think. So I'm glad that Lynn Ramsey has gone with Panavision here. In fact, another film that I went to see recently that's been shot in anamorphic Panavision is John Carter. So, that's it's nice to see if they're moving away from just bland Super 35, because it's just a bit dull, really. I can see why they go for it. It's just because it makes it much easier to have like a full screen version when you come to make like the TV version later on for broadcasters who just don't really want to show it properly. But I still would prefer it if they just push the boat out now and again, and went with Panavision. So that's a tip for all directors there. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 HD Master Audio, and there's a great use of sound, more than you'd expect from a drama. But the extreme bass and use of split surround effects is done to highlight the state of Eva's mind, so that's really clever. The extras are as follows, and there's not much of them. There's interviews, which runs just over 15 minutes, and split into 9 chapters over the brief running time. You can't select them individually from the menu, so you just have to skip through. But here we see Ezra Miller, Tilda Swinton, John C. Reilly, Lynn Ramsey, all very briefly talking about the film. The contributors change back and forth, so it's best to watch in one go, as the chapters are badly placed and, bizarrely, fall in the middle of sentences. There's an audio descriptive track, which basically does what it says on the tin. There's a trailer, which is in 2.35:1, and for a trailer, it doesn't spoil things, which is quite a rarity. Instead, it takes a series of seemingly random clips and makes it look more abstract, so as to give you a flavour of the content and nothing more. So, overall, the film, I'd give it 8 out of 10. Picture, 10 out of 10. Sound, 8 out of 10. Yep, still very good. Extras, 2. Very, very lame. Overall, 7 out of 10. So, it's certainly well worth a watch, whatever your preconceptions may be of the film. Now, before we have the top 10 movie charts, I'm going to play a cover version of a song I heard on Natalie's excellent punk rock show, which is on every Sunday on North Manchester FM from 5 till 7 p.m. Now, most of you will know the Carpenters' original of this song, which is admittedly a bit twee, but not many of you will know that it was covered by Babes in Toyland. And once I heard this, I just couldn't get it out of my head for days on end. So do let me know what you think of this. This is Babes in Toyland and Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Babes in Toyland with Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And this section, we have a look at the top 10 movie charts, which, for reasons I've explained before, to go through the US movie charts here, which, to be honest, they're just more interesting than the UK ones. And if I cover the UK new releases anyway, then you'll get a flavour of all things. But number one, we have Doctor Seuss's The Lorax, which is number one for a second week. And its first weekend, it took a whole $70 million. And in the second weekend, it's still done really, really well with $38 million. Well, 38.8, so still over halfway there for that. And this one, a 12-year-old boy searches for the one thing that will enable him to win the affection of the girl of his dreams. To find it, he must discover the story of the Lorax, the grumpy yet charming creature who fights to protect his world. Starring Danny DeVito as the Lorax, plus Ed Helms, Zac Efron, Taylor Swift and Betty White, there's no doubt that there's a lot of great animation in here, but as anyone knows who listens to this show on a regular basis, CG animation films just really do not do it for me, so I'll definitely be giving this one a miss. Number two, we have John Carter, or as I've since learned, it should be called John Carter of Mars, which took $30.2 million in its opening weekend. And Civil War veteran John Carter is transplanted to Mars, where he discovers a lush, wildly diverse planet whose main inhabitants are 12-foot-tall green barbarians. Finding himself a prisoner of these creatures, he escapes only to encounter Deja Thoris, Princess of Helium, who is in desperate need of a saviour. Starring Taylor Kitsch as John Carter and Lynn Collins as Deja Thoris, backed up by Samantha Morton, Willem Dafoe, Thomas Hayden Church, Mark Strong, Kieran Hines, Dominic West, James Purefoy, Bryan Cranston and Polly Walker. I went to see this the other day and it really is one of the maddest films I've ever seen. I might even do a review of it sometime if I can try and piece it together in my head, but it was very bizarre and a bit all over the place. So I might, if you're good, I'll bring you a review soon. Number three, we have Project X, and there's a very long, and oh, by the way, all the trailers for these are on the DVD Fever Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. But there's a very long and seemingly complex plot in the synopsis link of the Internet Movie Database, but the trailer makes it look like a very average stoner comedy with students trashing a big house and a fountain for no apparent reason, and I was waiting for the twist in the trailer, but there wasn't one. Starring Thomas Mann, Oliver Cooper and Jonathan Daniel Brown, the title Project X was initially a placeholder for a final title, but interest generated by the secretive title resulted in it being kept. The film was cast through a nationwide open casting call to find people who had never acted before, or who had limited acting experience. The majority of the cast were sourced from this casting call, but a few with prior acting credits, such as Mann, were accepted after multiple auditions. Filming took place on sets entirely in Los Angeles, California, over 5 weeks on a $12 million budget, and the movie is presented as home video from a perspective of an attendee using a camera to document the night's events. But it still looks completely pants. Number 4, we have Act of Valor, and there'll be more of this in the new releases section. Number 5, we have a new entry, which is Silent House, which took, well, for a thriller, it's probably, you know, fitting that it took, in its opening weekend, $6.66 million. That's 666, that's the number of the beast. And now, trapped inside a family's lakeside retreat, a young woman finds she is unable to contact the outside world, as events become increasingly ominous in and around the house. Starring Elizabeth Olsen, Adam Treese and Eric Sheffer-Stevens, it'll be interesting if this really is presented in one take, as the trailer suggests, but on the basis of the trailer, it just really looks like a thriller-by-numbers kind of film, so I'm not impressed at all with that. Number 6, we have 1,000 Words, and I'm talking of things that I'm not impressed by. This took, it's a new entry, took $6.18 million in its opening weekend. Now, fast-talking agent Jack, Eddie Murphy, his insincere patter is his chief weapon, but it irritates his assistant Aaron, Clark Duke, threatens his marriage to Caroline, Kerry Washington, and gets him into trouble representing, presumably, guru stroke author Dr. Singer, Cliff Curtis. Jack suffers karmic repercussions from Singer's magical Bodhi tree, which sheds one leaf for each word Jack speaks. After 1,000 words, Jack will die. Now maybe this limp comedy will work on kids who haven't suffered Eddie Murphy's worst films ever released, but as someone who knows, you know, that the best of his work stopped coming out once the 80s had ended, this is really one to avoid. Just, oh dear, oh dear. Number 7, we have Safe House. Now Matt Weston, Ryan Reynolds, is a CIA rookie who is manning a safe house in Cape Town, South Africa, when Tobin Frost, Denzel Washington, the CIA's most wanted rogue agent, is captured and taken to the safe house. During Frost's interrogation, the safe house is overtaken by mercenaries who want Frost. Weston and Frost escape and must stay out of the gunman's sight until they can get to another safe house. Now, I brought you a review of this in last week's show, and it was fine for a while, but it just seemed to completely fall apart after that. Now, if you want to hear the review in full, go to dvdfever.co.uk, click on podcasts, and check out show 30. Number 8, we have The Vow, and could really be bothered to go into this again. It's just it's some dirge of a romantic tale that came out for Valentine's Day, and just appalling. Avoid. But then again, if it's a romantic couple's film, if you're a romantic couple and you've not seen it yet, then you've kind of missed Valentine's Day, and you're probably in a bad box, and she's probably dumped you because you're a complete unromantic what's it, and that means you won't have to see this film. Then, you know, your quid's in, literally. Number 9, we have This Means War, where two top CIA operatives wage an epic battle against one another after they discover they are dating the same woman. But it's only Reese Witherspoon, for crying out loud. You know, and she has to choose between Tom Hardy and Chris Pine, both of whom were, from the trailer, look as wooden as anything. I mean, Tom Hardy, he was good in Inception, but Chris Pine, what's he been good in? Definitely not Star Trek. Oh, God, that was awful. Zachary Quinto and Carl Urban as Spock and Bones, respectively, they were good in Star Trek, whereas Chris Pine and Simon Pegg were, flipping awful. Yeah, don't go and see that one. Number 10, we have Journey to the Mysterious Island, another sequel for kids. Sean Anderson accompanies his new stepfather, Hank, to find his grandfather, Alexander, who went missing while exploring a lost island. With the help of Gabato and Kailani, they reach the island and find Alexander. After a few harrowing encounters, they escape from the island on the submarine Nautilus returning home. So it just sounds like I've just given you the whole plot there, basically. And you've got Dwayne Johnson, Vanessa Hudgens, yes, she of High School Thingamajig, and Michael Caine. And yeah, it's got, if you're old, if you're a bloke, then, I would say old first, referring to blokes. But I'm young. I'm about to turn 30. Again. Anyway, it's got Vanessa Hudgens in it, if that's your bag. Okay, a bit of music, and then we're going to have the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Act of Valour. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester 106.6. And in this section, we have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Act of Valour. Now, an unprecedented blend of real-life heroism and original filmmaking, Act of Valour stars a group of active-duty Navy SEALs in a powerful story of contemporary global anti-terrorism. Inspired by true events, the film combines stunning combat sequences, up-to-the-minute battlefield technology, and heart-pumping emotion for the ultimate action adventure. Act of Valour takes audiences deep into the secret world of the most elite, highly trained group of warriors in the modern world. When the rescue of a CIA operative leads to the discovery of a deadly terrorist plot against the US, a team of SEALs is dispatched on a worldwide manhunt. As the valiant men of Bandito Platoon race to stop a coordinated attack that could kill and wound thousands of American civilians, they must balance their commitment to country, team and families back home. Each time they accomplish their mission, a new piece of intelligence reveals another shocking twist to the deadly terror plot, which stretches from Chechnya to the Philippines and from the Ukraine to Somalia. The widening operation sends the SEALs across the globe as they track the terrorist ring to the US-Mexico border, where they engage in an epic firefight with an outcome that has potentially unimaginable consequences for the future of America. So, you know, starring no one famous in this film, that's as I say, because all the cast are portrayed by active duty US Navy SEALs, the missions are fictitious, but the weapons and the tactics are real. And given the look of the film, it comes across as a bit of a movie version of those Socom games which are played on the PSP, and it just looks brilliantly directed, so I highly recommend this. Also on this Friday, we have The Hunger Games, where in a not-too-distant future, North America has collapsed, weakened by drought, fire, famine and war, to be replaced by Panem, a country divided into the capital and 12 districts. Each year, two young representatives from each district are selected by lottery to participate in The Hunger Games. Part entertainment, part brutal intimidation of the subjugated districts, the televised games are broadcast throughout Panem. The 24 participants are forced to eliminate their competitors, literally, with all citizens required to watch. When 16-year-old Katniss's younger sister, Prim, is selected as the mining district's female representative, Katniss volunteers to take her place. I was going to say catnip then. Anyway, she and her male counterpart, Peeta, P-E-E-T-A, what strange names, I will be pitted against bigger, stronger representatives who have trained for this their whole lives. Now, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth, Elizabeth Banks and Woody Harrelson, I understand this is based on a series of books, and as someone who is a complete book philistine and always waits for the films, this does look a bit on the average side. And I wasn't swung when Jennifer Lawrence was on Breakfast the other day, bigging it up. Not for me. Also this week we have Wild Bill, directed by Dexter Fletcher and starring Charlie Creed Miles, Will Poulter, Liz White, Jamie Winston and Jason Fleming. Out on parole after 8 years inside, Bill Haywood returns home to find his now 11 and 15-year-old sons abandoned by their mother and fending for themselves. Unwilling to play dad, an uncaring Bill is determined to move on. Although Dean, the older boy, has found a job and is doing best to be a father to his younger brother Jimmy, the arrival of Bill has brought them to the attention of social services. With the danger of being put into care looming, Dean forces his feckless dad to stay by, threatening to grass him up for dealing. And if there's one thing Bill doesn't want, it's to go back into prison. He reluctantly agrees to stay for a week to help fool social services that the boys are being cared for. And having never really grown up himself, Bill quickly connects with Jimmy and through this new bond starts to realise what he's been missing. He has a family, a place in the world. He's a father. However, their happy family setup is short-lived when Jimmy gets into trouble with Bill's dangerous old cohorts. To sort it out, we breach the terms of his license and risk sending him back to jail. Bill's next steps will show what sort of a dad he wants to be. A good one or a free one. Now, the trailer makes it look like a decent, engaging and amusing British movie in the style of Guy Ritchie's decent films, you know, like Lock, Stock and Snatch. But the proof of the pudding, you know, will definitely be in the eating, I think. We also have that this week, The Grind, which is a modern urban drama set in the world of sex, drug dealers, dance nightclubs and loan sharks. Vince, Freddie Connor, is the nightclub manager of The Grind in Hackney, East London. And having fought his way to a decent living and a respectable lifestyle, he's determined to settle down and take life easier. Upon meeting and starting a relationship with Nancy, Zoe Tapper, Vince's dream of running a casino for his boss and getting married looks set. Bobby, Gordon Alexander, Vince's best friend from school, is released from prison and their friendship soon falls apart. Bobby's addiction to cocaine and gambling spirals out of control and he now owes a huge amount of money to Vince's boss, Dave, Jamie Foreman, owner of The Grind, and an East End loan shark. Vince's life takes a dramatic turn for the worse and loyalties are tested and friendships are pushed to their limits. Starring Jason Foreman, Jamie Foreman, Danny Don-Jules, Zoe Tapper, Gordon Alexander, Kelly Shirley, Freddie Connor. And what I particularly like about this is that it reunites many of the casts from 2010's British movie Baseline. And while that film wasn't perfect, I do enjoy seeing a good cast getting back together for something new rather than just a straightforward sequel or a follow-up. And finally out this week we have The Kid with a Bike. And the story begins with Cyril, a 12-year-old boy in foster care, searching for his father and lost bike. I wonder which is more important. Cyril escapes the foster home to try and find his father at his old apartment. When the caretakers find him, Cyril flees to a doctor's office nearby, where he grabs onto a woman in the waiting room. Trying to alleviate the situation, the caretakers take Cyril to an empty apartment, confirming that his father really has abandoned him. The next morning, the woman from the doctor's office, Samantha, shows up with Cyril's bike. She says she bought it from someone in the projects, but Cyril thinks it was stolen from his dad. He likes Samantha, though, and asks if she would take him in on weekends. Later, through an old personal ad, Cyril discovers that his father actually sold his bike. With Samantha, Cyril is able to finally track down his father. However, his father isn't too happy to be found and tells his son to never come back. Oh, now starring Thomas Doré and Cécile de France. God, the trailer, I'm boring myself talking about it. It just looks dull as dishwater. Excuse me. So avoid. But, in a moment we'll have a look at the, have a bit of music. And hopefully there'll be a bit more, some more interesting films to come, where we have a look at the DVDs out this week, including The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week, starting with The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. A globally beloved young reporter Tintin and his fiercely loyal dog Snowy, iconic characters created by Hergé, are brought to life in this worldwide smash hit. After discovering a model ship carrying an explosive secret, Tintin and his friends find themselves in the crosshairs of a diabolical villain. From the high seas to the sands of the North African deserts, every new twist and turn sweeps viewers to ever greater levels of thrills, peril and adventure. And when this just came out in the UK last October, it completely passed me by, and the trailer didn't do a lot to encourage me into it. Maybe it'll float your boat, you know, but excuse me. If you do like, you know, just let us know on the Facebook page. There'll be a trailer for that, and like, you know, most of the films out this week on there, so you know, so go and have a look. Also out this week, it's another episode of Doctor Who, and it's called The Demons. Now, in the peaceful village of Devil's End, something very strange is happening. A professor is preparing to open a nearby burial mound, and a local witch, has foreseen death and disaster. Meanwhile, the new vicar looks suspiciously like the Master, and he's using black magic to conjure up an ancient demon. Starring John Pertwee as a doctor, can he, Joe, and Unit stop their old enemy before he succeeds? What do you think? Special features, there's always loads of special features in these. As there's an audio commentary, there's The Devil Rides Out, which is the cast and crew talking about the making of the story. There's Remembering Barry Letts, a look at the life and work of Barry Letts. A location film, which is a mute amateur 8mm film shot in the village of Oldbourne during the location filming. Colorization test, where the original colorization test version of episode 1 is there, which was broadcast in 1992. Tomorrow's World, an article on the technology used in the restoration. There's also Radio Times listings, programme subtitles, production information, subtitles, program photo gallery, coming soon trailer, and it's got, as usual, digitally remastered picture and sound quality. And also this week we have The Devils, a special edition. And in 17th century France, a promiscuous and divisive local priest, Urbain Grandier, Oliver Reed, uses his powers to protect the city of Loudun from destruction at the hands of the establishment. Soon he stands accused of the demonic possession of Sister Jean, Vanessa Redgrave, whose erotic obsession with him fuels the hysterical fervour that sweeps through the convent. With its bold and brilliant direction by Ken Russell, magnificent performances by Oliver Reed and Vanessa Redgrave, exquisite Derek Jarman sets, and sublimely dissonant score by Sir Peter Maxwell Davis, The Devil stands as a profound and sincere commentary on religious hysteria, political persecution, and the corrupt marriage of church and state. Now, I'm not seeing this, and you know, the trailer doesn't exactly wow me, but it's finally available on DVD for the first time, presented in the original UK X certificate version, with a whole host of new and exciting extra features, it says here. And what's those extra features, Dom? I hear you cry. Well, they are in... Just hang on, I'll tell you. All right, settle down. Honestly, I'm so impatient sometimes. I really should wait. Okay, I'll tell myself. Special features include a Mark Kermode introduction, which lasts 2 minutes, where the broadcaster and critics newly filmed forward to The Devils is shown here. There's an audio commentary with Ken Russell, Mark Kermode, Michael Bradsell and Paul Joyce. There's Hell on Earth, which is a 48-minute documentary by Paul Joyce exploring the film's production and controversial history. There's Director of Devils, a 22-minute documentary featuring candid Ken Russell interviews and unique footage of Sir Peter Maxwell Davis recording his score. There's on-set footage with Michael Bradsell in a commentary, which is 8 minutes. There's also an on-stage Q&A with Ken Russell, which is 13 minutes, which is the director in conversation with Mark Kermode at the NFT in 2004. There's also Amelia and the Angel, which lasts 26 minutes, which is a delightful mix of religious allegory and magical fantasy. There's also the original UK trailer and original US trailer. There's also a fully illustrated booklet featuring new essays by Mark Kermode, Craig Lapper from the BBFC, and editor Michael Bradsell, with original production materials and on-set photographs. Okay, we're going to have a bit of music now, and then we'll have some more DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show on North Manchester FM 106.6 with me, Dom Robinson. And this section we have a look at some more of the DVDs and Blu-rays even out this week, starting with Weekend. A one-night stand that becomes something more, an unconventional love story between two young men trying to make sense of their lives. On a Friday night after hanging out with his straight mates, Russell heads out to a nightclub, alone and on the pull. Just before closing time, he picks up Glenn, and so begins a weekend in bars and in bedrooms, getting drunk and taking drugs, telling stories and having sex that will resonate throughout their lives. Now, I've had a lot of interest in this when I posted the press release on DVDfever.co.uk, but the trailer doesn't make the film look at all interesting to me, but I don't know. If it does for you, then on this disc we have the extras including cast and crew interviews, Quinford and Scout's picture gallery with commentary, the weekend UK premiere at the London Film Festival, an interview with director and cast, and also an interview with the director and producer. Also, we have Tower Heist, where a group of disgruntled luxury apartment employees, led by Ben Stiller, attempt to take down their wealthiest resident, Alan Alda, who defrauded all of them of their pension plans. With the help of a recently released ex-con, Eddie Murphy, who has a knack for robberies, a plan is in place to nab $20 million. Of course, what high-stakes ensemble comedy would be complete without plenty of shenanigans to boot? And it says here the fantastic supporting cast includes Matthew Broderick, Casey Affleck, Gabori Sidibe, Sierra Leone, and Michael Pena. And the trailer for this looks like it could go either way. It's got a great cast, but with Stiller, Murphy and Broderick, they could all be completely past their best, and we know for sure that Murphy hasn't made a decent film in over 20 years, and Thousand Words, which I mentioned earlier, just... God, it's a testament to that. Bonus features include a Tower Heist video diary, a Plotting Tower Heist, the Ratner Stroke Grazer Connection Part 1, which features the conspirators, and Part 2 with set pieces. The set pieces, basically. There's something called You Control, which is Picture in Picture, and the music of Tower Heist. An alternate ending, 15 months later. An alternate ending in Leicester's Bar. A feature commentary with director Brett Ratner, editor Mark Helfrich, and co-writers Ted Griffin and Jeff Nathanson. It's also deleted in alternate scenes and a gag reel. Ha ha ha. It's also got, out this week, got Moneyball. And, yeah, I've mentioned this several times when it came out in the cinema. Everyone's heard of Moneyball. Like, I'm not going to go into all the plot again. It's got Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. And it's been in the BAFTAs and all that. So since I originally mentioned it when it came out in the US last year, it's just been, yeah, plugged to death. But basically, I mean, I don't sound particularly enthralled by it. And, watching the trailer, I just can't see it as a kind of film that would have taken off over here, even with Brad Pitt in the lead role, because no one in the UK plays baseball. And overall, it just comes across as a film about a rubbish team trying to strive against the odds to be the best. And how many times have we seen that? Millions. So, the special features on the Blu-ray of this include a blooper with Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill, Billy Bean reinventing the game, Moneyball playing the game, deleted scenes, drafting the team, adapting Moneyball, and a PlayStation 3 wallpaper and theme. Other films out this week, the main new releases, we have 1911 Revolution, Dreams of a Life, A Horrible Way to Die, which sort of sounds a bit like Dreams of a Life in the way that goes, The Last Templar, Love on a Pillow, which I think is Brigitte Bardot, not sure, Machine Gun Preacher, A Night to Remember, digitally remastered, Resistance, Snowtown, which looks pretty good. I'm trying to get hold of that for review if the PR company would actually pay attention. Revolver, Take Shelter, Treasure Buddies, which is one of those pathetic films with dogs, that's what they call the little canine things that run around and yap yap and poo all over the place. Of course, Weekend as well. The only TV series that's out this week, which I've not mentioned already, is The Impression Show with Coleshaw and Stevenson, Series 2, why was even one more made after Series 1? And also a fair few Blu-ray premieres this week. We've got an American Pie 1-3 box set, quite a decent price for £14 on Amazon, A Bronx Tale, City of Men, The Crossing Guard, Get Shorty, California, Our House, with I think it's Ben Stiller and Drew Barrymore, Smoke, The Last Airbender in 3D, which it's rubbish, but I quite enjoyed it. One of those films that it was so bad it was good in a way, pretty worth a watch. And also Spaceballs, which is one of Mel Brooks' best ever films. Okay, that's the end of the first hour. Now coming up in the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV. Starting with a review of Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on the Xbox 360, stay tuned for that. And also the top 10 games charts. And to finish the hour, though, whereas a Bond film, Tomorrow Never Dies, was very hit and miss, the worst thing about it was Sheryl Crow's theme tune. Now, you may not have known this, but K.D. Lang was originally recruited to sing a different song for the theme, which was called Surrender. And someone put that together with the original opening credits for the film, and it actually comes together a hell of a lot better than Sheryl Crow's track. Now, I'll put a link to this on the video on the Facebook page, but here's the song. It's K.D. Lang and Surrender. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was And You Will Know Us by The Trail of Dead with Mistakes and Regrets. It's a DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. Now, in this second hour, we start off with looking at video games. And the first half hour, we'll look at a review of Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on the Xbox 360. We have the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, and also, the other day, it was the British Video Games Awards for 2012. So we'll bring you all the rundown of that. TV, we have a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, including, the My Phone Sex Secrets, which is... We'll come to that when it comes, if you pardon the expression. And look ahead to some more programmes coming up, and a new section, which started last week, called Mashup Madness, featuring lots of misses clips from TV. So we start off with Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on the Xbox 360. Now, back in the day, the Metal Gear Solid series was never really my sort of thing. I later got into and thoroughly enjoyed the Sock'em games on the PSP. Add to that the Hitman series, and my love of stealth games was born. The three games in this package are as follows. There's Metal Gear Solid 2, where players take on the role of a one-man army determined to stop a deadly high-tech weapon from falling into the hands of a highly elite resistance group known as Dead Cell. Players must utilise their skills in stealth, weaponry and counter-terrorism to fight off the competing powers. Progress through a twisting storyline and eventually face the gigantic war machine Metal Gear Ray. Then there's also Metal Gear Solid 3. In the struggle to achieve world peace and world dominance in the Cold War period, rivaling governments are secretly developing weapons, technology that could threaten the future existence of life. Destined to be the first, a race ensues to become the ultimate nation. A special elite tactical soldier is summoned to penetrate deep in the heart of enemy territory and obtain intel about Metal Gear, a prototype weapon with nuclear capabilities. This is your mission, and you must infiltrate alone. As Naked Snake, you must outsmart enemies with camouflage, close quarters combat, stalking, interrogating, climbing, hunting, and treating injuries in this critical chapter of the Metal Gear saga. And finally, there's Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. The area is the 1970s. Big Boss has stationed his Soldiers Without Borders in Colombia, South America, where he was approached by a visitor from Costa Rica, a nation without a military. In the wake of the Cuban Missile Crisis, a mysterious armed force seems to be engaging in suspicious activities. Players take control of the famed Naked Snake at a critical junction in modern history. Now, Metal Gear Solid 2 was fun for a while, but I did find it annoying that there's no proper camera for it, only like a Resident Evil style fixed point camera unless you hold down the first person view button. And I'd rather be able to toggle that, quite frankly. In addition, I found it tricky to get used to the controls and often would throw myself into a cardboard box for no reason or fire off a shot when I wanted to conserve my ammo, especially when I wanted to not alert my presence to the baddies. It's also ridiculous that you can't grab the weapons of soldiers that you kill or knock out. As soon as got fed up with this entry and just moved on to number 3. For those who do enjoy it, there's some extras for you under the specials option. There's basic actions, which teaches you how to do specific things, such as covering yourself with a cardboard box, presumably not by accident, and knocking on a wall to attract the attention of a guard who won't leave his post. There's previous story, where you can read Snake's story in the New York Mirror. Photo album, there was nothing on here, so I guess that fills up later on. And a dog tag viewer, which is just basically where your saved games are. There's also Snake Tales, which is some more backstory about our hero and the mini-games. Now, when it came to Metal Gear Solid 3, at least that one had more freedom of movement around it, around your environment. And I get that all three games are stated as being in HD, but they just don't feel particularly HD. Yes, there's a blade of grass moving in Metal Gear Solid 3, but we had all that in the original Halo back on the Xbox, so it's hardly an advancement. This entry also includes the original Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 games, the 8-bit originals. And in fact, I think I got more of a buzz playing those than the games I was meant to be playing, even though I wasn't really sure of what I could and couldn't always interact with. Overall, I have to say the Metal Gear Solid HD collection was rather uninvolving. And I guess Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker is on disc 2, but I had enough with the first two games, quite honestly, so I didn't move on to that one. So, yeah, disappointing. I mean, the graphics, sound and playability, I'd give them, at most, I'd give them a 6 out of 10 for those. Enjoyment, a 3. Overall, 5. Just, no, not good. That's your game review for this week. Now, in a moment, we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have the top 10 games charts. Which will be number 1? Will it be Mass Effect 3, SSX, or Street Fighter X Tekken? You'll find out in a few minutes after this song. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And in this section, we have a look at the top 10 video games charts, first of all. Starting with, number 1, obviously. Number 1, we have a new entry for Mass Effect 3. Number 2, we have SSX. And number 3, a new entry for Street Fighter X Tekken. Number 4, we have FIFA 12. Number 5, Mario Party 9. Number 6, a new entry for The Sims 3 Showtime. Number 7, Mario & Sonic London 2012 Olympic Games. Number 8, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Number 9, Assassin's Creed Revelations. And number 10, forever staying in there, Summer Fitness. Other new entries, the only other one in the top 40 is a new entry for Unit 13 on the PlayStation Vita, and that's at number 15. And that is a fantastic game. I brought you a review of that last week, so that's just well worth getting. It's the best game I've played on the Vita so far. Re-entries, there's only one re-entry as well. It's just Mario Kart on the Wii. That's it. So new video games releases coming out this Friday. There's Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. And I put some gameplay footage in the trailer for this on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And if you buy this game from Amazon, it includes the Renegade Gun Pack downloadable content. Now, Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City delivers a true third-person team-based shooter experience set within the dark and sinister Resident Evil universe. Not only does this setting provide a rich backdrop to the action, but it also delivers a unique and brutal triple threat battle. Zombies and bioorganic weapons, BOWs, add to the mix as players compete against their team's opposing squad and tackle this third unpredictable element that could only exist in the twisted Resident Evil universe. The result is a brand new style of gameplay that breaks the conventions of traditional third-person shooters. It is September 1998, and the action centres on the ill-fated Raccoon City. When the Umbrella Corporation learns that one of its top scientists, Dr. William Birkin, plans to sell the experimental G-virus to the US government, they order an elite team of Umbrella Security Service, USS, soldiers, led by Hunk, into their secret research facility to secure the only known sample of the virus. The operation takes a turn for the worse when Dr. Birkin injects himself with the last vial, mutating into a deadly creature. G. Birkin and an overpowering team. That's what he's called, G. Birkin. Then he overpowers the team. During the battle, the deadly T virus is leaked into the sewers and spread through Raccoon City, infecting the entire population. Hearing of the outbreak, the USS team is given fresh orders to destroy all evidence of Umbrella's involvement and silence anybody that might discover the truth. The Umbrella Biohazard Countermeasure Service, UBCS, is also deployed to help contain the situation. Meanwhile, the US government has quarantined the city and dispatched its own team of special operatives to determine the source of the mysterious outbreak. Caught up in the chaos are rookie police officer Leon S. Kennedy and Claire Redfield. Players take on the role of an Umbrella security soldier and battle against all the competing forces at play in Raccoon City. Choose from six characters, each one equipped with a unique skill set, including the female field scientist, Four Eyes, who can manipulate the T-virus and take control of BOWs raiding the streets of Raccoon City, or the weapons expert and the USS team, Captain Lupo. Now, from the gameplay link I've put on the Facebook page, it just looks like a bog-standard third-person party, third-person shooter territory. Something we've seen a million times before. Yeah, I'd like to say, when can we get back to the style of Resident Evil games, which actually scared you a bit, which the first one definitely did. You know, it's watch that with the lights out, or play it with the lights out, and it was just freaky as hell. But they just look rubbish by comparison. Also this week we have Armored Core 5 on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, and in a shattered world where the people are pushed towards, get your words out, Dom, the abyss of catastrophe, yet they keep fighting. With a theme based on the idea of human strength in the face of adversity, the story describes the folly and transience of humanity, as well as its never-give-up attitude when faced with a desperate struggle. It features defend and conquer territories, where you must prepare for the enemy invasion. Online players can invade your territory even when you're not online. Set your defence system strategically to fight automatically against other players and protect your dependency. When you're online, fight in person versus person online team battles to defend against enemies invading your territories. There's a most complete multiplayer mode, where the game supports cooperative mode on all missions such as destroying a target or investigation. And team gameplay is encouraged, with five simultaneously, with up to 20 in a team. In world mode, you can confront each other for world domination. And there's offensive gameplay, where gameplay has been totally revamped to offer a more powerful, offensive attacking experience. That's offensive as going on the offence rather than, swearing a lot, I presume. as also ultimate customization, where the game offers countless parts for to collect for an incredible level of mech customization, where you can customize your territory for upper rank missions with defense system variations. But mech warrior battles really aren't my bag. You know, I prefer to shoot at something resembling real people, which does sound a bit bad when I phrase it like that, but I mean in shooting at something like a real life looking situation like the Grand Theft Auto games, and not fancy nonsense like this. A couple of other brief things out this week. There's a double pack of Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 on the Xbox 360 and PS3, and that's out just a mere $17.99 from Amazon. And I never got into the original Assassin's Creed, I never played the second one, but the most recent one, Revelations, I did enjoy that, so I brought a review of that for you a few weeks ago. Yeah, so that's worth playing. So maybe it's worth a trip back to the original, who knows. Also this week, there's for just under £20, there's a Homefront Ultimate Edition on the Xbox 360 and PS3. I brought you a review of this a few months ago now, probably on one of my first shows, and it really fell short. It was really disappointing. But anyway, if you enjoyed it, then this Ultimate Edition includes all downloadable map packs and multiplayer content released for Homefront, including a Fire Sale map pack, the Rock map pack, and the Express 870 shotgun. Okay, in a moment we'll have some special video games news after a bit of music. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. In this section, we have a look at some video games news. And there's only really one thing that, you know, dominates it this week. And basically, that's the news that Portal 2 and Battlefield 3 have dominated the BAFTA Video Game Awards 2012. Now, the annual ceremony, sponsored by Game, which is probably the last time they'll sponsor it since they're about to go down the dumper, it's a ceremony which celebrates the skill and innovation of top talent across the gaming industry, which took place last Friday at the London Hilton in Park Lane. TikTok Toys was named the BAFTA Ones to Watch Award, a prize given in association with Dare to be Digital, and The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, which had been seen by some as a front-runner at the awards, went home empty-handed after losing out in six categories. So the winners and the losers, well, in the action category, up for grabs, there was Assassin's Creed Revelations, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Portal 2, Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, but the winner was Batman with Arkham City. The award for artistic achievement, the nominees included Batman Arkham City, L.A. Noire, Little Big Planet 2, Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, Uncharted 3, but the winner was Rayman Origins. For audio achievement, the nominees were Batman Arkham City, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Dead Space 2, The Night Jar, thankfully not The Night Jar Jar Binks, Uncharted 3, but the winner was Battlefield 3. Best debut game, there was Bastion, the nominees of Bastion, Euphoria, L.A. Noire, Monster Mind, Rift, but the winner was Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet. Never heard of that. For design, the nominees were Batman Arkham City, L.A. Noire, Little Big Planet 2, Super Mario 3D Land, Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, but the winner was Portal 2. In the family category, nominees included Dance Central 2, Kinect Sports 2, Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, Lego Star Wars 3 The Clone Wars, Mario Kart 7, and the winner, Little Big Planet 2. For game innovation, the nominees were Bastion, Child of Eden, From Dust, L.A. Noire, The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, but the winner, Little Big Planet 2. On mobile and handheld, the nominees were Dead Space on the iPhone, Magnetic Billboards Blueprint, Quarrel, Super Mario 3D Land, The Night Jar, and the winner was Peggle. Online game on a browser, the nominees were Gardens of Time, I Am Player, Resistance 3, Skylanders Spyro's Adventure, The Sims Social, but the winner was Monster Mind. Best online multiplayer, nominees included Assassin's Creed Revelations, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 3, Dark Souls, Gears of War 3, Little Big Planet 2, but the winner, Battlefield 3. Original music, nominees were Assassin's Creed Revelations, Batman Arkham City, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, Uncharted 3 Drake's Deception, but the winner, L.A. Noire. Best Performer, we have the nominees where there's Aaron Stanton as Cole Phelps in L.A. Noire, Nolan North as Nathan Drake in Uncharted 3, Stephen Fry narrating Little Big Planet 2. Now, why did they nominate Stephen Merchant as Wheatley in Portal 2? He's just bloody annoying in everything these days, especially those flipping bank adverts. Also, Togo Agawa as Diplomat's Advisor and Military General in Total War Shogun 2. But the winner was Mark Hamill as the Joker in Batman Arkham City. Sports Fitness Games, we have nominees were Dance Central 2, Dirt 3, F1 2011, FIFA 2012, Your Shape Fitness Evolved 2012, and the winner was Kinect Sports 2. For the best story, the nominees were Batman Arkham City, Deus Ex Human Revolution, L.A. Noire, Elder Scrolls V Skyrim, Uncharted 3, but the winner, Portal 2. Strategy, nominees Dark Souls, Deus Ex Human Revolution, Football Manager 2012, From Dust, Ghost Recon Shadow Wars, but the winner, Total War Shogun 2. For the Game Award of 2011, rather, voted by the public, nominees included Batman Arkham City, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, FIFA 2012, L.A. Noire, Minecraft, Portal 2, Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, Legend of Zelda, Skyward Sword, Uncharted 3, but the winner, Battlefield 3. And finally, the best game, nominees were Batman Arkham City, FIFA 2012, L.A. Noire, The Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, The Legend of Zelda, Skyward Sword. The winner, well, said it before, Portal 2. Okay, that's all your video game stuff for this week. And in a moment, we have got some programs on in the past week, including My Phone Sex Secrets. Not mine, but, you know, someone else's, obviously. I wouldn't tell you about mine, because, well, it's that time of day, isn't it? I don't make phone calls like that. I don't make any phone calls. No one phones me either. I quite like it that way, because I just get peace and quiet, quite frankly. Anyway, that's probably more information than you needed to know. And to have a bit of music, and then we'll have some TV programmes watching the past week. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And this section, we have some TV programmes watching the past week, starting with My Phone Sex Secrets, which was, well, it was on, a week yesterday, but I didn't get to see it at the time now, but it's technically still current because it does get a repeat tomorrow night at 10:55. It's on Channel 4. But should you still watch it? Well, as Britain experiences the worst recession since the war, over a million women are out of work. Drastic times call for drastic measures. My Phone Sex Secrets uncovers at least one British industry that's burgeoning. Phone sex. Meeting the women who are paid to talk dirty. Gone are the clichés of bored housewives earning pin money. Instead, getting in on the act as young, single, married and older and educated women. And this programme meets first-time recruit Rosa. And after weeks of unsuccessful job hunting, the student believes that phone sex may hold the key to getting back in the black. Now, quite frankly, this was rather a letdown. There were a couple of young women who engaged in this service, one of which did it for a year before giving up, earning a lot of money in the process, while an older woman actually ended up dating one of her clients. Beyond that, it was a complete waste of an hour of my time. Probably if I phone them up as well, because, no, I'm not going to go there. Who would want to? Jesus. Well, paying for it anyway. Love Life was the other programme that was on this week. On ITV, or the only one that I watched, because, yeah, not all of them are really worth watching. On ITV on Thursday at 9 o'clock, which is a new series. Now, Joe returns from a year abroad and is shocked to find that the girl he loves is pregnant. Lucy has told no one who the father is, but Joe discovers it is her married boss Dominic, not me, whose wife Penny is having trouble conceiving. Joe confronts him, but Dominic has no idea Lucy is pregnant. All four lives are thrown into turmoil, and then the baby arrives. Wow. They're starring Rob James Collier, Andrea Lowe, Alexander Armstrong, Sophie Thompson and Gregor Fisher, and Kieran O'Brien. This, well, it was a predictable load of old tosh. Joe, Rob James Collier, met up with Lucy, Andrea Lowe, by chance in a bar, only for her to reveal that A, she's pregnant, and B, she's married. But as we later learned in a flashback from her side of things, she's just borrowed the wedding ring from a friend before he approached. As the programme plodded on, it played out as predictable as possible, with Penny, Sophie Thompson, looking in the mirror forlornly, just after going into a baby clothes store to pretend she was expecting. it just bored me rigid, and yeah, I'm not going to be back for more, quite frankly. So that's, I did say it was only like a brief, you know, couple of programs that watched in the past week. But will there be anything worth coming up in the week ahead? We'll find out in a moment after a bit of music. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we have a look at the new TV programs coming up in the coming week. Starting with a massive show that's been, obviously, an American show. It's been hyped to hell. I was going to say something else. It's called Touch, which starts tonight on Sky One at 8 o'clock. The first episode is called Tales of the Red Thread. Kiefer Sutherland returns in an ambitious new drama, portraying a single father who discovers that his son has a very special gift. He can basically tell the future, or see the futures, from what I remember reading about it. It stars Kiefer Sutherland, David Mazouz, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Danny Glover, Roxana Brusso, and David Haag. And it's, I don't know, I know the pilot was on like broadcast on American TV ages ago, and I've got it, and I keep meaning to watch it, and I've just then forgotten. But I'll watch it ahead of, you know, next week's show and bring you a review of that. But it looks like, from the trailers I've seen, or the clips I've seen, it looks like it could go either way. I mean, I would, even though 24 got a bit tired, I would still love it, like another series of that, quite frankly. And will they ever get around to making a film of 24? Who knows? They keep talking about it, but they talk about a lot of things. Now, from 24 with, no, not really, but with Jack Bauer to, oh, Tenuous Link, Hit the Road, Jack. Oh, someone stop me. Oh. It's on Channel 4 tonight at 10:30. And was it 10 o'clock? I think the first episode was 10 o'clock, and then after that it moves to 10:30 from the week after. Anyway, have a look from 10 o'clock. It's probably on then. In this new series, Jack Whitehall takes his show on the road, visiting a different UK city each week. In this first episode, he's in Newcastle. The set for Jack's stand-up performance is built in the Civic Hall, where he's joined by Newcastle football legend Alan Shearer and music guest Rizzle Kicks. But before putting on the show, Jack shares his experience in Newcastle, staying with a local family, going out on the toon with the son, and going undercover as a Hollywood producer to see how far the cast of Geordie Shore will go to achieve fame. Probably as far as it takes them. From the trailer, it looks like there's a series of sketches mixed in too, so I'll be looking forward to this, especially because Jack Whitehall does actually make me laugh a great deal, especially when he was on Breakfast recently, clambering all around the set. I'll put a link to that video on the Facebook page, because that was fantastic. One thing I'm really looking forward to is, it's like, it's crack cocaine for the soul, it really is. Not that I've ever had crack cocaine, or any kind of cocaine, or crack, other than the crack of, well, the crack in the plaster of my walls, quite frankly. Anyway, fantastic programme. It's called Four Rooms, and it's just addictive as hell. It's on tomorrow night on Channel 4 at 8 o'clock. Now, four of Britain's top dealers in art, antiques and collectibles wait in four separate rooms, each prepared to spend their own personal fortunes if the right item comes through the door. From memorabilia to taxidermy, and from art to antiques, members of the public have come to sell their prized possessions, hoping to walk away with a fortune. But to do so, they have to work out when to sell and when to see the next dealer, because once they leave the room, the offer is off the table for good. The first episode in this new series features the chair on which J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter, the original music score for Psycho. No, she didn't write that, that's just the next item. There's artwork by Marlon Brando, Francis Bacon's paintbrushes, and, cover your ears if you're under 18, an antique dildo. Will any of them make their owners rich? Well, Four Rooms is presented by Anita Rani and feisty new buyer Celia Sawyer, who joins original dealers Emma, Jeffrey Salmon, Andrew Lamberty, sounds like Andrew Warity, and Gordon Watson for the second series. But I am disappointed to learn that Emma Hawkins is no longer on the show, because she was fit as. And, yeah, just fit as, basically. Anyway, there's also, if you must watch it, Sport Relief 2012, which is on BBC One Friday night all evening. Sport Relief 2012 is back, and it's bigger and better than ever before, it says here. This year's event, in a great year for British sport, brings together the biggest stars and TV brands in a huge TV celebration to attempt to raise a record amount for Sport Relief. The night is presented in a star, by a star-studded lineup. Well, star-studded for BBC One Light Entertainment terms, including Gary Lineker, James Corden, Claudia Winkleman, Dermot O'Leary, Davina McCall, Fern Cotton, John Bishop, Randa Hart, David Walliams, and Pratik Keelty. Plus the special editions of Strictly Come Dancing, Miranda, Ab Fab, 2012, Benidorm meets Britain's Got Talent. Oh, hilarious. Horrible Histories, now that is a decent show. Saturday Kitchen, Outnumbered, Nevermind the Buzzcocks, Celebrity Juice, Question of Sport, QI, and Mock the Week. Also, there are live performances from JLS, who will sing the Sport Relief single Pride. LMFAO, Snow Patrol, and Emily Sandy are also featured. Plus, Helen Skelton celebrates her astonishing fundraising challenge. And, oh, she's fit as. And Freddie Flintoff, and also Frank Skinner, who continue to attempt their own fundraising, presumably. But, I don't know, they're just telethons, just... They just seem so old hat. And, you know, are we past all that now? Obviously not. It just fills an evening of quite cheaply for the BBC, doesn't it? Finally, something for the weekend becomes Sunday brunch. Ah. Now, the BBC decided to axe Something for the Weekend after 6 years with Tim Lovejoy and Simon Rimmer. This Sunday at 10 o'clock, the Sunday brunch with Tim Lovejoy and Simon Rimmer. There'll be no Louise, but then she was clearly put on gardening leave as she disappeared the week after it was announced she'd be not on the new show. Yeah, I know she'd been away for far too many holidays, but as they made no mention of this of a disappearance this time, it was obvious she'd just been ditched in advance of the new show. So, I don't know. If anyone's seen there have been sort of teaser trailers for the new show which shows a set being built behind Tim and Simon. But, you know, if that was the case, then surely when those were shown before the last episode of Something for the Weekend was broadcast, and since it's going to be in the same studio because it's from the same production company, which is the same studio, it's Princess Productions, the same studio where they make the right stuff, then surely the set would have looked different for the very last show of Something for the Weekend. Confusing. I'll leave that one with you. We'll have any music while you ponder that one. And then we'll have our new section called Mashup Madness. After this, this is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson, for the final section of this week's show, which is now called Mashup Madness. Now, but before we get to that, a bit of news first. Yes, a bit of TV news, might drop some in. I see some mad people have complained about Susanna Reid's cleavage on BBC Breakfast. Well, I'm here to tell you that I've studied it deeply in depth and I can't find anything wrong with it. What are they complaining about? They should be ashamed of themselves. Thank you. Okay, now what I like to do, going back to the point in question, it's making mashup videos, usually made up from several different TV shows and lasting around 1 or 2 minutes. And I've had some of them featured on XFM Manchester's Breakfast Show with Tim Cocker and Jim Bob. And last September, one of them was also on RooTube, for which the polite title was Snookaloopy. But following on from a comment about Dennis Taylor and one of player Mark Allen's little traits, the full title became Snookaloopy Fist Pumping in the Commentary Box. So this question, I mean this week, whereas last week I played a whole one, which was Brian Blessed versus the Dirty Doctors, which is on the Facebook page, and also you can Google that and all the rest of it. I'm just going to play some little snippets from some shows in the past week, starting with one where from Super Size versus Super Skinny, which had Dr. Christian saying to Overeater Hugh,
"Stick your finger in there and have a taste of that." Something wrong? That is the tangy flavour that you like, admittedly slightly more concentrated than you're used to.
And then, while Sean Williams left BBC Breakfast on Thursday, Bill Turnbull was more concerned about
100% British knickers.
And then Deal or No Deal was back to its usual smuttiness, with the banker troubling us with his toilet movements, as contestant Mark was taking forever to choose his next box.
He phoned up to say the tortoise's head is peeping out.
Ha 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 ha
get this hair on the move then, eh? Yeah, I have like a feeling. When I know one's gonna come, I usually get a bit of a tingle and things. But when he touched that, just like a bit of a nervous tingle, and as soon as he touched it, it just went. Come back after the break, because the banker's gonna make me witch. That's it!
It's gonna do what?
Make me witch.
Witch?
Yeah, witch. Instead of rich, witch.
Why?
Because it's somewhat what... It was in the Any Fools and Horses episode.
Was it?
Yeah, you're gonna make me a witch.
Right.
Wadja Wabbit and all that. Would they?
Well, be careful how you say banker.
Matthew Wright's back is troubling him again on the right stuff, but Jason Donovan was on hands with some words of wisdom.
Oh, yeah, he's gonna give you a witch.
This is what I have to sit on to make me look normal. But the worst bit about it is it makes me perspire just holding myself in these positions to try and look normal. Yeah, moist, mildly moist.
Mildly moist. Well, it's a nice day to be moist.
It's going to be warm. Summer's here.
And finally, Question Time had Dimbleby thanking everyone for being there on Thursday, including Willie Rennie, leader of the Scottish Liberal Democrats, a last-minute replacement for Charles Kennedy, saying...
Thank you all, panellists, for coming here. Willie, thank you particularly for coming at the last minute. It must have been very stressful, but I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
For now, though, that's everything this week, so thanks to everyone who listened, and check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And I'll be back next week for some more movies, games and TV on the DVD Fever Show. I'm going to go out with David Bowie and John, I'm Only Dancing. This is 106.6.
106.6.